The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but why should you accept Jesus when Christians act so holier than thou? It turns you off. It makes you uninterested in Jesus. Well, I don't blame you for feeling that way. I really don't. And I will address that very concern in just a few minutes. Welcome. Welcome to our sanctuary, a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters. It's nice to be back with you after a week or two. Our program did air last Sunday, but it was a best-of show with repeat clips, so it's actually been 2 weeks since the last live broadcast. During that time, much has happened in the news. I couldn't possibly get to all of it. I am going to get to as much as I can. Much has happened in the news, and during that time, much has happened with my health. I spent most of the last 2 weeks dealing with a vicious sore throat. My friends heard about the sore throat, and they have been praying for me. I have really good friends, and they really do pray. And when they're around me, many of them have been saying, "Hey, you sound good. Your throat must be feeling better." Then I have to explain to them that I didn't say I had laryngitis. Now, I don't know how it is for others, but when I get laryngitis, when I can't talk, my throat does not hurt at all. Laryngitis is brought on by congestion from a cold or some allergy-related thing, and it hits me even on days when I have talked very little. Yes, such days do exist. It was never, ever a matter of not resting my voice. With laryngitis, I can't talk, but I don't hurt. The throat feels fine. Last week and the week before, it was the reverse. Last week, my throat hurt like Hades. That's a nicer word for the real word coming to my mind. But my voice was at full throttle. Now, I must say, given the choice between hurting or not being able to talk, I would go with the pain, hands down. I'm sure nobody is completely surprised by that choice. Finally getting myself to a doctor, I was given a prescription for my sore throat. But this time, all the fun was with the pharmacist, not the doctor. Now, I'm going to mercifully not name the store or the people, but I got to tell you, I walk up to a regular drugstore, use your imagination, and she tells me, "Oh, we can get this for you right away. Right away, you don't even have to wait." Now, I should have suspected something right then. When did you ever not have to wait at least 30 minutes, hands down? She comes back instantly with this great big jar of stuff, and this seemed too good to be true. Well, when something seems too good to be true, it is too good to be true, McFly. And she says, "Does your insurance company cover over-the-counter prescriptions?" And I didn't know what she was talking about. I said, "This isn't over the counter. I just got an antibiotic prescription from a doctor." She says, "Oh, no, this isn't an antibiotic. This is Tylenol." Now, first of all, why would I go up to the pharmacist to ask for Tylenol? You want Tylenol? You go to any one of the rows, you grab Tylenol, you go to the front and you buy it. Now, I had always known that a doctor's handwriting was worse even than my own. But how one can read the name of an antibiotic and bring a bottle of Tylenol is a question that could be asked even by somebody like me who majored in drama in college and never took a pre-med class. Well, she finally had a colleague read the prescription. He seemed to have an added ounce of comprehension, and the order for antibiotics was filled correctly. Look, I realize that when we go shopping, we will not always be served by the sharpest crayon in the box, but one has a right to expect a bit more competence from something as important as the medical community, don't we? Now, I know what many of you are thinking. You're thinking, "See how messed up things are, Bob? This just proves that we need socialized health care." No, sweet Virginia, I'm afraid you're missing my point. Quite the contrary. Try to imagine things about 100 times worse. That would be socialized healthcare. You don't believe me? You don't believe me? Talk to people from other countries who've lived under it. Not Michael Moore, who visited Cuba for a week. Or just talk to anybody who visited a post office recently. The service would be about the same. Now, having said that, I do have to give Obama some credit. And I'm saying this sincerely, not facetiously. I believe in giving credit where credit is due. And I am very grateful that the merchant captain was rescued from the pirates. Pirates, actually, they're terrorists. I do have to say, can't we use the real word? Yes, sea captures are technically called pirating, but the repetitive usage of that name makes people imagine something from Disneyland. Aye, matey, there be pirates here, me bucko. Now, I am grateful that Obama was willing to authorize force in taking out Jack Sparrow and his buds. I do have one question. How on earth did this event go on for an entire week without Geraldo Rivera putting himself on the scene? That itself was newsworthy and very unusual. Perhaps in our jubilant joy over the heroic rescue, we have forgotten to thank God for the greatest blessing of all. While we're on the subject of thanking God, many of you just finished celebrating two important holidays, Easter and Passover. Some of you celebrated both. President Obama attended a Passover. Now, look, I was fair. You were all here. You were all witnesses. I was fair enough just moments ago, fair enough and honest enough to compliment Obama when he deserved it, because he did deserve it. So I complimented him. So now allow me to be fair about a matter where he does not deserve a compliment. I know. It's supposed to look good that he went to the Passover, and I'm sure it looked good to a lot of people. And you're probably thinking, as a Jew, I of all people should appreciate it. I'm actually a Jewish Christian, but Jew nevertheless. Once a Jew, always a Jew, as they say. I guess Obama's obligatory nod toward Judaism is meant to get our minds off the fact that he plans to sit down with Iranian President Ahmadinejad and sell Israel up the river with a two-state solution that shrinks Israel's borders until it becomes a one-state solution with an obliterated Israel in exchange for promises that Iran will discontinue developing the nuclear promise, a promise Ahmadinejad will keep about as well as Kim Jong-il kept his when our last spineless Democratic president made a deal with a dictator. Oh, well, let's just forget all that and be grateful that Obama celebrated Passover. The appearances are everything after all. But there's even more great holiday news, fantastic holiday news. I bring you good tidings of good cheer, but it's one of the lesser popular holidays, but one that we always take the day off. The students of Brown University have voted to discontinue the celebration of Columbus Day, which happens every October. They wanted to discontinue celebration of Columbus Day because of the way our former mishonored hero exploited Native Americans. Of course, abolishing the holiday does not mean that they aren't going to be taking the day off. You won't live to see the day when college students vote to not take a day off. Yes, it will still be a holiday, but they won't be celebrating Columbus. So what will they be celebrating? They're going to celebrate fall. It's a fall festival. Oh, sure, that's something to celebrate. We always get excited when it turns fall. The lineup is almost complete. We have a fall celebration, formerly Columbus Day. Christmas long ago became a winter celebration. Easter long ago became the celebration of spring. We've got three out of the four seasons. That leaves only summer. What holiday can we transform next? What holiday can we turn into a summer celebration? Oh, of course. How silly of me. Independence Day, more commonly called the 4th of July. That's a pretty good name, in as much as it actually is the date of the holiday. Can you just imagine the boardroom of people that named that holiday? Hey, it takes place on the 4th. Why don't we call it the 4th of July? That's great, JB. That's great. Okay, but surely this one must go. Next, why celebrate the birth of a nation stained with slavery and segregation, even if we abolished that kind of stuff long ago? Besides, celebrating the date July 4th shows discrimination. It is unfair to the other 364 days of the year. Yep, a summer festival. That's what it will be called. That's what it will be next. Mark my words. But back to the holidays we just celebrated recently. Like a couple of days before Easter, we have Good Friday. Good Friday. I'll bet a lot of you have asked this question, but it always seemed like you were stepping on sacred ground. What on earth and where on earth did they come up with a name like that? Good Friday. It sure wasn't a good Friday for the disillusioned followers of Jesus. They wanted a king. They wanted somebody who would push the tyrannical Romans off their conquered land and beat the snot out of them. They didn't want a disappointing imposter who was going to allow himself to be executed by crucifixion, the most shameful, painful torture the world had ever known. Now, naturally, that wasn't the rest of the story. Of course, they cheered up on Sunday. You know the rest of the encounter. And to some, that's just it, a fictitious encounter. Many do not believe in the Sunday sequel. But Sunday's impact on the subsequent 2,000 years of history cannot be denied. Face facts, something unusual must have happened. Unusual enough even for non-Christian historians of the time to acknowledge the trial, death, miracles, and in some cases, even the resurrection of Jesus. Just think, this common man from a poor family, a simple carpenter who never fought a war, never ruled as king, never encouraged a violent revolution, never wrote a book, influenced the world so much that we even count the calendar differently. Now, I know you can say before Common Era instead of before Christ as the new, improved, politically correct BC, but everyone knows this is no different than calling Easter vacation spring break or Christmas vacation a winter carnival. The customs all started somewhere. Even people who do not believe in Jesus use his name constantly, to the exclusion of other religious figures. When's the last time you heard somebody accidentally catch his finger in the door and cry out, "Oh, Buddha," or "Muhammad"? No, they don't say that. Yes, something happened on Sunday. But back to Friday. What seemed like an unforeseen tragedy turned out to be the very plan of God. Jesus did not fail in his mission by dying on the cross. He intended from the beginning to die on the cross. He did this as a way of paying for the selfish deeds and selfish natures of human beings. The message of Christianity: love, mercy, forgiveness. What Christianity is not about: judgment, condemnation. Now, please understand, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying God won't judge the world someday, because he will. I'm not saying we will not answer to him in the next life, because we will. What I'm doing instead is I'm reminding us that the whole idea behind the cross was a Savior who wanted to spare us the judgment we deserve by taking it on himself. Nothing you have done, and I mean absolutely nothing, no word, no action, no thought can separate you from the forgiveness of God if you will only let him forgive you. Yes, we must also repent. Yes, we must also turn toward him. But I have met so many who have refused to change their torn lives only because they thought God wanted nothing to do with them. In fact, God was offering supernatural help, his Spirit, to help them with the task. How unfortunate that people listen to the gospel and somehow hear the opposite of its message. They think Christians are yelling at them about not being good enough for God. Sometimes the communication breakdown springs from the damaged soul, or the wounded soul, or the discouraged person who thinks he or she is at a point of no return. And some of you out there feel that way, and I need to tell you, you're not at a point of no return. God loves you. If you had been the only person in this world, he would have come down and died just for you. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm going to be talking in a few minutes about these tea parties we had. We've been kind of reviewing some of the events of the week. And if you have been to a tea party, or you know somebody who went to a local tea party or national, we have some people who listen to us around the country, or you just have an opinion about tea parties, pro or con, I'd like to hear your 2 cents. You don't have to agree with me. We're going to talk about these tea parties in just a few minutes. But first, there was something else I was getting to. As I said, last week we had a repeat broadcast. So there are a lot of news events we're catching up on. And we're also catching up on Easter and Good Friday. I was not here to give a live Easter or Good Friday message. So I was talking about Good Friday, what is good about it. Well, of course, one of the things that's good about it is on Sunday, Christ rose from the dead. And there's a lot of evidence for that. But a lot of times this is far more emotional than evidential. And I talked about the fact that sometimes people think they've sinned so much, they're at a point of no return and God wants nothing to do with them. And I'm telling you, God loves you so much. As I said right before the break, he would have come down and died on the cross just for you. So sometimes it's your own damaged sensory equipment that hears Christians talk about love and forgiveness, and all you hear is condemnation. And the Christians are trying to tell you, no, you're going to be forgiven. Now, there is another side of the coin, and we have to be fair and honest on this program. All too often, it's not your fault. I'm talking to my skeptical friends. It's not your fault. Sometimes it's the fault of Christians. Christians at times can say the stupidest things. And tactless Christians are responsible sometimes, coming across as holier than thou or better than everyone else. And even if they don't mean to come across that way, and I suspect many of them do not mean to come across that way, they do come across that way. But the message of Jesus is that we are all in the same boat. We are all selfish or sinful, as the Bible would call it. We are not people who have earned favor with God. We as Christians, what we are claiming, what we're supposed to be claiming, the only thing Jesus told us or gave us permission to claim, is that we are people who gave up and threw ourselves at the mercy of the court, hoping for a pardon while the judge himself pays our fine. As I once heard it put, a true Christian is just one beggar telling another beggar where the bread is. That is what Jesus had to accomplish on the cross before he could rise from the dead. And that is why Good Friday is good after all. And now I want to say this as carefully as I can. If the church has its problems, and it does, if the church has its problems, so does the rest of the world. If Christians sometimes sound self-righteous, those who poke fun of Christians, those who poke fun of other conservatives have been known to do the same thing. I mean, who are we kidding? Good Friday this year was followed by Good Wednesday, otherwise known as Tax Day, otherwise known as Tea Party Day. MSNBC commentator Keith Olbermann, you know, the guy who likes to talk about the bias of Fox News, the guy who likes to talk about the bias of talk radio, he featured an objective, expert, insightful commentary on the tea parties going on all over America. His guest was none other than comedian and outspoken political activist Janine Garofalo. In her exact words, let's be very honest about what this is about. This is not about bashing Democrats. It's not about taxes. They have no idea what the Boston Tea Party was about. They don't know their history at all. It's about hating a black man in the White House. I mean, you can go to the internet, go to YouTube, you can watch this for yourself. I saw it. This is not hearsay. This is all about people who don't want a black man in the White House. It's about racism. Well, she must not have watched the same tea parties I did. When self-righteous, condescending celebrities react to the extreme right, They demonstrate nothing but extremeness of their own, extreme arrogance, matched step by step with extreme ignorance. The left just loves to lecture the right about being too extreme. They tell us not everything's black and white. There are gray areas. There are subtle nuances to life. Things can be complex. We must not oversimplify. That's what they call the conservatives to do. And yet, for people that say that things are not complex, things shouldn't be oversimplified, the only explanation for tea parties is racism. That's it. That's the only explanation. She knows this to be true. She knows it for a fact. She can prove it. There couldn't possibly be a different reason or two for people protesting. Is that somewhat of an extreme reaction on her part? Is this a stereotype? Is this a simplification? Is this an unwillingness to look at nuances behind everything being either A or B? Garofalo explodes over what these Dundee Fundy conservatives don't know about the original Boston Tea Party. With all due respect, Ms. Garofalo, what exactly do you know? Do you know that many who voted for Obama were also protesting? Did you know that? People who voted for Obama fully admitting that they caught up on the repetitive mantra change, only to be horrified when they started seeing what those changes actually were. Did you know that many Democrats attended these parties? Did you know that some of the protesters still like Obama, but they're just concerned about trillion-dollar deficits? Did you know, Ms. Garofalo, that some of the Republican participants were also speaking out against George Bush because he did overspending as well? We're also speaking out against the last Republican Congress we had? You did seem to know, Ms. Garofalo, that African Americans were included in the tea parties, but you dismissed them as having Stockholm syndrome. You had to have seen this on TV. She's saying, first she says, and it's all white, there wasn't one black person. And then all of a sudden you realize she was almost trying to take back the words as they were coming out of her mouth, but she didn't catch them and pull them back in very well. It was a hard taffy pull for her. Because as she's talking, she realizes, well, I'm here talking about it. I haven't been to any of these things. I haven't looked at any of these things. How do I know we don't have some African Americans? So then she stops and says, well, let me put it this way. If there are African Americans there, they have Stockholm Syndrome. You know what Stockholm Syndrome is? That's a nickname that they give to somebody who's kidnapped and held for ransom for so long that if it's a woman, she sometimes falls in love with the kidnapper. If it's a male, he sometimes falls in love with the female kidnapper. Or maybe they get brainwashed, or they become part of the cult. Okay, so this is her point. If a black person did go, they must have Stockholm Syndrome. I see. It is impossible, absolutely impossible, that an African-American could protest the policies of a black president or ever be on the side of any conservative idea unless they have been brainwashed like kidnap victims. That was the statement of Jeanine Garofalo, and that wasn't a racist stereotype generalization of black people at all, was it? You know, it's not like we didn't come to anticipate such barking long ago from Garofalo and Olbermann, who offered no such disagreement, but face it. That kind of race baiting has been going on in MSNBC for a long time. I have to confess, though, to expecting at least a little better from CNN. And we'll mention what CNN did when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S. electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. We were talking about Janine Garofalo on Keith Olbermann's MSNBC show, saying the kinds of stuff we expect from MSNBC. I expect a little better from CNN, not much. They've gone down the tubes too, but I would have expected at least a smidgen better from CNN. Unfortunately, they have nothing to brag about either this week. CNN correspondent Susan Roshan covered the Chicago Tea Party, making very sure to ignore the sane-looking, level-headed people who talked rather than shouted and whose voices weren't whiny and twitty. She only wanted the ones that went, I'm protesting against Obama. If somebody talked like that, then she interviewed them. She approached the kookiest-looking sign holders and interviewed them alone until one of the more rational women actually confronted her right on the air about her cherry-picking. Nonetheless, Rojan's summary of the event went like so, and these are her exact words. I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government and anti-CNN, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network Fox. Those were her words. I'm going to tell you, folks, these are outright lies, both outright lies, although I'll give her the benefit. I'll give her the benefit of the doubt and admit that she may just be a naive person, too lazy to investigate the truth. But then, even such a benefit of the doubt makes us wonder, shouldn't the news correspondent do a bit of research and actually know what she's talking about? In fact, the people were not anti-government. They were anti-big government. Now, anybody who doesn't know the difference doesn't understand the original Boston Tea Party, but I hope Rojan doesn't ask Garofalo for an explanation, because I'm not sure she gets it either. As for Fox News, let's just settle this thing with Fox News once. I'm so tired of this. They're always called right wing. Let me tell you why they're called right wing. They're called right wing because they allow both the left and the right to have their say. Since the right seldom, if ever, gets such a chance on the left wing networks, Fox looks right wing by comparison. Truth be told, many people at Fox did not speak favorably about these rallies. Yes, they covered the event. Of course they covered the event. It was news after all. And yes, the week before they promoted the fact that they were going to cover it. That's called advertising. It's also called originality. In as much as originally the other news media seemed to be ignoring the story or downplaying it, the New York Times buried it, wouldn't even talk about it on the front page, these same Doubting Thomas networks were sure to show up every time anti-war protesters reared their energetic little heads, even at gatherings of 100 or less, 50 or less, 10 people from Code Pink or 15 people standing around Cindy Sheehan. They're right there. Last week's microscopic, non-newsworthy tea parties were, for your information, held in every single state. Oh, sure. Some were better attended than others. Some had a small attendance, but the Chicago Police Department estimated 5,000 just in Chicago. Denver also had 5,000. 4,500 people gathered at the capital of Olympia, Washington. Lansing, Michigan, and Oklahoma City had 4,000 each. 3,000 hit the state capital of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Another 3,000 were at Birmingham, Alabama. 3,500 protested in Sacramento. 2,000 were in Sarasota, Florida. Columbus, Indiana also had 2,000. Yuma, Arizona, I've been to Yuma, Arizona. I drive through it. I drive through it as fast as I can. That's not too hard. It's not exactly the biggest city in the world. I hear they closed down the library there. Somebody checked out the book. But even they had 1,500. And Weatherford, Texas is a community of only 25,000 people, yet 3,000 of them marched toward the courthouse. I could go on and on and on and on and on, but I think you get the point. Somehow, when word of the event first became known, this was not going to be news to our unbiased mainstream media. But then when it proved itself to be about as newsworthy and dynamic as any public gathering can possibly be, the likes of CNN and MSNBC could no longer dismiss the little party. So they switched to strategy two. Strategy two, insult the event and poke fun at Fox News. Fox News, incidentally, has better ratings than MSNBC and CNN combined. I have a flash for those of you in the mainstream media who look down on Fox. Look again, they have become the mainstream media. You are not the mainstream media anymore. It didn't have to be that way. It didn't have to happen. It's just that the rest of you forgot your jobs. Let's flash backwards a little bit to a related event. I'm going to tell you how it's related in a moment, so hang with me. When the federal building in Oklahoma a number of years ago was blown up by Timothy McVeigh, then President Clinton immediately condemned the action as that of an evil coward. He called McVeigh a coward before he even knew McVeigh did it. Whoever did it was an evil coward. And he was absolutely right. And at the time, Rush Limbaugh, no lover of Bill Clinton, nevertheless had the decency and consistency within the parameters of his own ideology to go on the air the very next day and say, "I stand with the president." You see, Limbaugh was exhibiting the very bipartisan spirit which liberal Democrats love to lecture Republicans about. As for the bipartisan shown by our current Democratic Congress, do I even need to comment? Let's just mercifully drop the subject. In any event, Rush Limbaugh's support for Clinton was immediately rewarded a few days later when Clinton blamed conservative talk radio for inspiring the kind of hate that leads to terrorism. Now, why did I just bring that up? Why do I bring up the past? Because people, a parallel but far broader, far more disturbing event is going on in our country right now. Many conservative writers and talk show hosts, including myself, have been willing to give credit where credit is due, even to a president whose policies concern us. You heard me earlier on the show. You've heard people on talk radio for the last week. We complimented President Obama on the decision to authorize force in the rescue of a merchant sea captain from water thugs. The left wouldn't have complimented George Bush if he landed on Mars and discovered a cure for multiple sclerosis. If we feel George Bush was being treated unfairly, then we must be consistent and fair ourselves. Unfortunately, this act of Americans coming together in unity over at least one important matter has been eclipsed by a report from Homeland Security warning us about the right-wing extremist groups as a prime recruiting pool for terrorism. Among the HLS definitions of extremists are, hold on to your seats, pro-life advocates, people concerned about expanding federal powers, people concerned about protecting our borders, people concerned about gun control laws, war veterans returning home, and people who don't want to have a black president. Of course, see, they list all these things that might concern people, and then all of a sudden they talk out of the other side of their mouth. And say, oh, but a lot of them aren't even concerned about any of those things. They just don't like the fact that Obama's black. They couldn't possibly oppose him for some other reason. All such conservative special interest groups are supposedly vulnerable to the seductive lure of a fanatical home-based terrorist organization. Meanwhile, remember Hamas? And Al-Qaeda? Remember the boys? Remember the gang? You know, the people who actually admit to being terrorists, the people who brag about the fact that they're terrorists? Well, they can now celebrate because their names will no longer be used in the war on terror. At least they won't be used a lot. In fact, it's not even called the war on terror anymore. The new fashionable name is war against man-made disasters. Look, it's not that we aren't trying to give President Obama a chance. It's just that he seems to keep going out of his way to make it difficult for us.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Bell, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuild." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuildInc.com. That's ProBuildInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuild.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that The Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Yes, indeed. I have complimented Obama when he has deserved it. I have criticized him when he doesn't deserve it. But even when I criticize him, I'm not trying to nitpick, honestly. I'm not. For example, I don't care if he bowed in front of the Saudi king. I don't care whether he bowed or not. I really don't. I know a lot of conservatives have made a big deal out of it. I don't care. True, it may have looked like a sign of weakness, but the weakness ship sailed long ago anyway. With Obama's willingness to make diplomatic deals with Iran, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and just recently he shakes the hand of Hugo Chavez, who called our last president a devil, and our next president shakes his hand. Okay, be that as it may, my real problem is not that he bowed in front of Saudi king. It's not the bow, it's the spin. The spin. The bow was recorded on video. We don't care whether you did it, just don't lie about it. I mean, we can see it for ourselves. We see it. But the Obama administration is telling us, well, sure. Looks like a bow, but actually our president was stooping a bit to shake hands with a shorter man. I see. Of course, that must be it. And all these other people that he traveled around the world visiting that were also short of him, why didn't he bow down to them? He was taller than all of them. And while we're in the neighborhood of clarification, as we learned that he did not bow, even though it looked that way, Obama never worked closely with terrorist Bill Ayers. Obama never voted against the Infant Protection Act. Obama never worked with Acorn. Obama never heard a racist word, not even once in the 20 years he sat at the feet of Reverend Wright. Obama has not added trillions to our deficit. That was all Bush's doing. Obama doesn't believe in big government. Obama has no desire to take over business. And the king really isn't wearing any clothes. Never mind what the situation looks like. Never mind that Obama's word about every item on the list is contradicted by public record. Don't trust your eyes. Just trust his popularity. After all, everyone else believes our Messiah, and the majority couldn't possibly be wrong. Well, could they? Will history judge Obama, or will it instead judge the human-filled waves of stupidity that kept him afloat? President Obama is promising that his new stimulus package will create millions of new jobs, including 5 million new green jobs. What's a green job? No, the word green doesn't refer to the color of our dollar bill. Those things went the way of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. Green refers to the research and production aimed toward alternative energy and advancement in the only war Obama seems to think we're having, the war against global warming. To accomplish this task, $150 billion, let me say that again, $150 billion will be spread over 10 years. A billion doesn't even sound like a lot anymore since we're talking about trillions. But there was a time when $150 billion meant something. Now, will Obama be able to deliver on his promise? Will he create new jobs? Of course he will. Sure, he will. Look, whenever money is made available, it can create business, which means it can create jobs. If I had just $1 million, never mind the trillion, never mind the billion, if I had just a mere million, I could start any kind of enterprise I wanted if the government allowed me to. I could start my own comic book store. I could start my own hamburger chain. I could start a factory that sells homemade Slurpee machines where you make your own Slurpee. I could start a series of download lectures on 16th century Swedish kings, which nobody would download, but I could start it as a business if I want. And then once I've created my new business, I hire people to do the production, sales, bookkeeping, and marvel of marls, hold on to your marvels, hired people actually get paid. So yes, if we have enough money to throw around, we can always create new jobs. Only one question, where is this money coming from? Sooner or later, somebody's going to have to pay the piper. I know it's already the understatement of the century to say that our taxes will go up. It's the understatement of the last two centuries to say that our taxes will go up. But I do want to remind everyone that there are as many different kinds of taxes as there are different kinds of reality shows. The Obama administration and its twin sister, the Democratic Congress, planned so many tax hikes on businesses, large and small, that to pay for the 5 million new jobs, far, far more than 5 million old jobs will be lost. Oh, well, I suppose it doesn't really matter. What matters is that the kinds of jobs our government likes will now exist, and the kinds of jobs our government does not like will go the way of the dollar and the dino. Now, in the interest of fairness, our government did finally find something to cut spending on. The military. I guess we won't need it anymore, as much as Obama has been traveling around the world apologizing to people about what a bad country we are. Meanwhile, on the home front, many banks are now trying to return the money they borrowed from our generous government, and the administration is actually refusing to take the money back. Trillions of dollars of deficit, they're refusing to take the money back. Two important questions. One, why are banks returning the money? Two, why does Obama insist that they keep it? The answer to question one, banks have decided that the government is taking too much control over their enterprise. There's too much cost to their loan. It begins with rules about who must be fired or how much to pay employees. In time, it could mean specific direction on who to give loans to, who to withhold from. This could open up Pandora's box of special interest groups receiving favorable treatment and political enemies getting the shaft. The answer to question two, why does Obama insist that they keep it? That answer is the same, because he wants that kind of control. And he has the gall, the unmitigated gall, to get up on TV and say, I don't believe in big government. How does he say this with a straight face? If you would like to weigh in on any of this, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. Our toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. That's 1-888-344-1170. You can also contact us by email, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, SIEGEL.net. We'll get to our email and phone call questions when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Good projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. We have some emails here, and you can reach us questions at bobsiegel.net. This is Anne from San Diego. She says, sorry you are sick, but it did give you a good story to share. This happened at the beginning of the program. She says, you are so funny. Well, thank you, Anne. I try to be. Regarding my comments about the Pirates, Sandy in La Mesa writes, that was great. I hope you are feeling better. I and we have been praying for you. Thank you, Sandy. That really honestly means a lot to me. Robin in San Diego writes, I made the mistake of getting into a debate with one of my supervisors, very liberal, in Obama's spending plan. I asked him about the $3 trillion debt our country is now facing. I heard it's more money than all our previous presidents combined incurred in debt. His response was Obama's plan will prevent his response was that Obama's plan will prevent our country from going into $15 trillion debt. He said the Bush administration had us heading for that, and Obama is actually saving us the money. He said that under the last 3 years of the Clinton administration, the country was debt-free. I don't remember that, do you? Was our country debt-free at the end of the Clinton administration? I didn't want to bring anything else up about Obama, but what he said in his speech in Turkey really frightens me. It frightens me by where the country is headed. It doesn't literally frighten me. Also, the whole same-sex marriage being passed in two more states is very concerning. Okay, well, let me respond to that, Robin. First of all, George Bush made no attempt to take over banks and businesses. Yes, he tried to help them. He made no attempt to take them over. Obama is trying to do exactly that, using the economy as kind of a perfect storm and an excuse. He keeps claiming he inherited the problem from George Bush, and I think we're going to hear that the next 4 years. That will be his excuse every single time he makes things worse. When anything goes well, he'll grab credit. When it doesn't go well, he has perfect immunity. It is, after all, the fault of George Bush, who people would blame if they got a flat tire. The economy was actually very good under Bush for 6 years. It wasn't good the last 2 years. What happened the last 2 years? Oh, that's right. The Democrats took back the House and the Senate. Now, Bush was merely trying to buy up some bad loans, loans made possible originally by the likes of Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, who put pressure on banks to give out loans to minorities and other special interest groups who could not afford to pay back the loans. As for Clinton, the economy was not bad under him. Your friend is telling the truth, but what your friend is conveniently failing to tell you is that we had a Republican Congress in the House and Senate for the last 6 years of Clinton's administration. So you see how these facts can be juggled and reinterpreted. Now, regarding my thoughts today about Good Friday, Mary in Battle Creek, Michigan writes, nice thought and put very well. Regarding the same subject, Lise from El Cajon writes, what a timely message, Bob. Thanks for that. And Nils, our friend from Spring Valley, has something to say about that message. And as always, Nils doesn't write his comment in one sentence. Nils has a lot to say, and I appreciate that about Nils. I don't always agree, but he has a lot to say. He says, regarding my Good Friday message, enjoyed your commentary. It sounds all very good. However, I am just wondering how many you think will truly repent and finally become a part of the world Jesus died for. If the numbers are consistent with reality and many of my Christian friends' expectations, then it looks like Christianity is a religion of condemnation to me. Only universalists can truly say that Christianity is a religion of salvation when it comes to numbers, said in my ever so humble opinion and manner. I have a former JW associate who may now be gone on to his reward, who announced at one of our gatherings that he thought only 10% or less of those who profess to be Christian really are saved. This number was a vast increase over the former opinion. as a JW. Also, you just can't get away from Matthew 12. Now I need to quote, not Matthew 12, Matthew 7:14. He's writing, this is a famous, or should I say infamous, place where Jesus said, "Find the narrow gate. Wide and easy is the way of destruction, and many pass through it. Narrow is the road to life, and few find it." That's not one of the more popular verses in the Bible. Jesus goes on later to say that there's a real heaven and a real hell. And what he's saying then is more people are going to end up in hell. Now, Nils is referring here to being a universalist. Universalists, although there's different kinds of universalists. A Christian universalist is one who believes that we do have salvation only through Christ. And they do believe that those that don't accept Christ will end up in hell, but they believe that the day will come when God will let people out of hell. There's different types of universalism, but I know from previous dialogues with Nils that that is his type. He thinks hell's kind of a purging place, more similar to what the Catholics call purgatory. And so in Nils' opinion, anybody, no matter how evil they are, will eventually be let out of hell because they will have learned their lesson. And he says that's a better message because then we can have the message that nobody's going to hell. He is absolutely right about the fact that in today's quote-unquote open-minded, quote-unquote politically correct, quote-unquote tolerant generation, they don't want to hear us talk about hell or anything else. But anyway, that's what he's referring to in Matthew 7:14. So let's get back to Nils' letter. Also, you just can't get away from Matthew 7:14, which when interpreted narrowly and in the present context is very condemnatory, don't you think? Yeah, you know what, Nils, it is condemnatory, but that's what it says. Anyway, Nils continues. He says, "It is nice to say all those rosy things," talking about my Good Friday message. "It's nice to say all those rosy things, but do you really mean it? I don't ask this flippantly. I believe you, Nils. I know you're being sincere." He says, "I don't ask this flippantly. I really mean, is it fair to say all those good things about Christianity when you, along with most Christians, probably believe that most people will continue to be on the broad road leading to destruction? When you ask a Jehovah's Witness if they think only JWs will be saved, they will answer, and that is not our position to judge. And of course, God will save all the good people. That is a great answer if you don't ask them to define good. As always, your fellow skeptic in Christ, Nils." Well, first of all, Nils, once again, and I know you realize this, it's not that those who are good will get saved. The Bible teaches that nobody's good, that God loves everybody, that God died for everybody. I went through that in my Good Friday message. The term good is appropriate there. Is the idea of God sending people to hell the action of an unloving God? In a couple of weeks, I'm going to have a debate with a man named Eddie Tabish. He's kind of known to go around and talk about the Holocaust. He's Jewish. He actually has a relative who died in the Holocaust. Horrible thing. I'm Jewish, and although none of my immediate relatives died in the Holocaust, we're all related as Jews. My people died in the Holocaust. Those of you that follow my show hear me speak out against anti-Semitism all the time. So let's use that because this comes up a lot. You know, so those Nazis who pushed the Jews in ovens are in heaven because they believed in Jesus, but the Jews are now in hell, suffering a worse hell. That doesn't sound very fair. The person that does not go to heaven, the person that goes to hell, and let me say this as carefully as I can, those who know for a fact, or at least strongly suspect that Jesus is real, but turn away from him because they'd rather live a life of sin, are the people going to hell. And when I've mentioned that to skeptics, they have said that that makes sense. The person that's sincerely ignorant or just doesn't, he's not convinced, we're not sure. I believe with all my heart that God will take sincere ignorance into consideration. The Nazis who went to church, going to church nowhere makes you a Christian, and sitting in a garage makes you a car. If they were people who had really given their lives to Jesus Christ, they would have been led by the Holy Spirit. They couldn't have possibly done the Holocaust. A Nazi who repents could be forgiven, but it's got to be genuine, and they can't just be looking to get out of a punishment. Now, let's think about this. Would a loving God allow a hell, or would a loving God not allow hell? Here's Adolf Hitler, considered one of the most mass murderers of our time, maybe of all time. Maybe Joseph Stalin runs a photo finish with him. So he does these things, kills 6 million Jews and millions and millions and millions of gay people and Jehovah's Witnesses. Nils mentioned the Jehovah's Witness. They got killed, and Russians and he killed all kinds of people. Christians, many Christians did stand up to him. Dietrich Bonhoeffer stood up to the Nazi Party and got hung for it. And at the end of his life, Hitler sees that the Allies are coming. He takes a quick cyanide capsule. He checks out. This capsule helps him check out, and he never has to stand before the Allies, no tribunal, no world court, never has to answer for it, and he just dies and never has another conscious existence. Doesn't something inside of us cry out that a loving God would hold him accountable and judge him? A loving God would have a hell, just as a loving judge would have a prison. That's all hell is, a prison. And we will see you next week on The Bob Siegel Show.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.